Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Community in Depth. Every month, we're so grateful because somebody from the city of Hastings rotates in to tell us about their wonderful department. And today, Chris Paulson is here. He is the assistant fire chief for the city of Hastings. And I can't wait to get caught up on all the things going on. How have you been?
I've been great. Summer went really fast.
No kidding. Doesn't it seem like just yesterday you were in here talking about the 100 days of summer safety?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. It just flies every year.
It completely flies. And then you start thinking about the Booyah, which was very recently. Tell me about the Booyah. What'd you think this year?
Well, we had our 84th annual Booyah on Saturday. Great turnout. We made 910 gallons roughly this year. We made 100 less than last year, and we sold it all. So we're pretty happy about that. Took us a little while to sell it, but we did eventually send it all out the door. Had a good crowd inside. It was a good day. A little warm, but you know, I think that people don't really feel like eating soup on a 84-degree day, but...
But they need to be planners, and they need to be putting it in their ice cream buckets to go in their freezer, so...
That's right, yeah.
On a January day, you can break it out.
Thaw it out and eat it up.
Yum. Yep. So how come you made 100 gallons less?
Well, for the past couple of years, we've had some left over at the end of the day, and that's not our goal. Our goal is to sell it all out, and we don't want to have any left over. So we just decided to make 100 less this year and see how it goes. And we did get rid of all of it, but it, like I said, it did take us a little while. So.
And did you have to tweak the recipe then to make 100 gallons less, or did you still put in as many vegetables and all that?
We actually put in just as much as we did last year.
Oh.
Because we all thought the soup was kind of thin last year. So
look at you enhancing the recipe.
Yep. We're trying to always produce a high quality product. And, you know, last year we thought it was good, but we thought it seemed kind of thin. So we kept the ingredients list the same, but made less soup overall.
Is that water, you mean, or?
Well, there's obviously water in it, but we used fewer kettles, so there was less water put in to begin with. And, you know, we still had the same amount of broth. We still had the same amount of meat. We still had the same amount of vegetables. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, it was a hit from everyone I've talked to.
Great.
So
that's what we like to hear.
Wonderful. And again, will you tell people the money raised goes where?
So the money that we raise from the Booyah goes toward two scholarships. Two high school seniors get scholarships from the firefighters every year.
And do they have to say they're going into some sort of...
No, okay. No, they don't have to be going into fire or EMS. I mean, we obviously, we look for that on an application and we will prefer that, but
yeah.
They could be going into anything as long as they have a really good application and essay that goes along with their application. We'll present a scholarship to anyone. So the two scholarships, we make donations at times to families that have, you know, lost their house from a fire, if there's a benefit for them, other benefits for people in the community. Things that you can't use tax dollars for. We don't necessarily buy equipment with that Booyah money or the fundraiser money. We have, but the city's budget supports the fire department. This is us as the group of firefighters trying to support the community and doing a fundraiser.
Well, it's so nice. Before we went on the air, we were talking about how you feel the community really does support you and your fellow firefighters. And that's wonderful to hear. I hope that we do.
Very much so. Yeah, I'm blown away by the support that we get from the community. It's fantastic.
Well, what you do is fantastic. It's important work. So on a typical fire day, or you're on a shift, does everyone have the same kind of shifts, or do some people work shorter hours, or?
Well, we have full-time and paid-on-call part-time people.
Okay.
Our full-time staff work a 24-hour shift. They start at 7 a.m., and they stay at the fire station and go home at 7 a.m. the next day.
Okay.
So that's a typical full-time work shift. Our part-time and paid-on-call people come in and help us out. They'll work a six-hour shift in the fire station, and then they carry a pager on their off time. And when the pager goes off, they come back in.
So are they working when somebody's sleeping? Is that what you're saying? Or
the six-hour shift is usually during the day, either 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. or 4 p.m. to 10 p.m. or something along those lines. Not so much overnight. Full-time staff usually handle most of the calls overnight.
Which is a bummer if you are sleeping and a fire breaks out, right? How does that work?
It's the nature of the business. It's just how it goes. They happen on Christmas. They happen on Easter. They happen overnight. They happen on Sundays. They happen on Fridays.
I get annoyed when my dog wakes me up in the middle of the night to go outside.
I understand.
So it's even worse is what you're saying. Yeah, okay.
Yes.
Just teasing.
Yeah,
I know what you do is very important. Thank you, Chris Paulson. Well, it's interesting to me because I think our fire department is very responsive. And what did you think the average time to a call would be from when somebody dials 911? I'm just curious.
I think that right now we're averaging in the city 6 minutes.
Boy.
From 911 call to us showing up at your door.
Oh my gosh.
Which is pretty good.
It's pretty darn incredible. Yeah, well, thank you. So a lot's going on, of course, in the fall, and we are recognizing that this is Fire Prevention or Fire Safety Month or something?
October is Fire Prevention Month,
okay.
And specifically the week of October 6th is Fire Prevention Week.
We should try to prevent them all the time, though, right?
We should. Yeah. We should, absolutely.
But we're proclaiming it that first week of October.
Correct.
Okay.
It coincides with the anniversary of the Great Chicago Fire.
Did not know this. Tell me more about that.
I can't tell you what year it was. It was a long time ago. Another stat I wish I had for you.
No.
I didn't come prepared.
That's not true, Chris.
I can Google
These
it really quick.
These are all things
anyway,
that I didn't know a thing about. Okay.
A long time ago. I don't know when.
Was this when Mrs. Murphy...
Mrs. O'Leary's cow.
Cow. I knew it was some
and
Irish
And it actually,
woman.
Mrs. O'Leary's cow took the rap on this fire. It wasn't the cow's fault.
But they kicked over a candle
Yeah,
or
they said that it kicked over a kerosene lantern
and
started
right.
the stable on fire, and then it spread to the whole city. But one of the more major fires in U.S. history. And so Fire Prevention Week coincides with the Great Chicago Fire.
Wow.
Yep.
Okay. That was an accident. And I'm sure that's how a lot of fires start, isn't it? By accident?
Yes. Yes. There are not many intentionally set fires.
Isn't it just by terrible things coming together?
The perfect storm.
The perfect storm, yeah.
Yep, unfortunately, that's how a lot of them go.
And I know you're probably not a proponent of people having candles at their house.
No, yeah. Candles do start a lot of fires.
Even if you're sure that you're going to blow it out when you leave the room?
Yeah, and then you forget.
I know.
Yep.
And then what happens?
And then they burn down to the bottom, and then they catch whatever is holding them on fire, and then that catches whatever else is next to them on fire.
Candles are just bad news.
They are. You know, I've got some at home. We have them in the kitchen, and I don't allow them anywhere else in the house.
Okay.
I have rules about candles at home.
So let's talk about how you are celebrating Mrs. O'Leary's
cow's accident.
Yes.
So on Tuesday,
okay.
October 7th, we will have our annual Fire Prevention Week open house.
That's so fun.
It is. It is. We draw a huge crowd. And we've talked to firefighters from other departments, and they don't draw the crowd that we do. I think the thing is the community support that we have. You know, we try to show things that
One
are interesting.
One time I came home with a bunch of light bulbs I didn't know I needed.
Oh, yeah. We might even have the light bulbs
Excellent.
Again this year. I'm
I'll
not
be
sure.
Over. But you do a lot of things, and you actually show off your wonderful equipment.
Yep, we show off our equipment. We let the kids spray the fire hose. Mm-hmm. We usually cut up a car and show our auto extrication techniques. We usually get our community partners, you know, the police department, the sheriff's office, some other people to come in and show off their equipment, talk about their jobs. Dakota 911 is usually there. They're talking about what happens when you call 911. When should you call 911? When should you not?
Those are all great questions. What is the answer to those questions?
Well, they're actually changing the rules of the game a little bit here on us. When we consolidated dispatch centers back in 2008 in the county and they opened Dakota 911, they said call 911 for everything. And they're getting busy enough now where they need to start separating out some of the non-emergency things.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to be rolling out a public information campaign this fall here about the times to call their non-emergency phone number and report something.
And is that driven by the county?
The 911 center operates with a board of directors, and there's representation from each of the cities,
okay.
the county, that all kind of cooperate to provide direction for the 911 center. If you have an emergency or if all else fails, 911 is the number to call. Still,
okay.
that will not change.
And then what happens after we call 911?
You will be in contact with one of the public safety telecommunicators at Dakota County or at Dakota 911, and they will ask you what your emergency is. Fortunately, with technology, there's a lot of things that happen as they're picking up the phone. They're getting your location. They're usually getting
really
a caller
nice.
ID phone number or something like that, and they're getting your telephone number to call you back. They might ask you all of those questions just to confirm them, mm-hmm. but they will take down the nature of your mm-hmm. emergency. If you're having a medical emergency, they actually provide instructions that they call pre-arrival instructions on how to do CPR or how to relieve a foreign body from the airway, how to do bleeding control. And they'll provide instructions for you while we're on the way. And then all the information goes into a computer. They figure out which units to dispatch and they send the calls out.
And then literally 6 minutes later, you are at somebody's doorstep. I bet people are just so grateful to see you.
Most of the time, yes. Yes, we are fortunate to be welcomed when somebody's in need. I like solving problems, and that's why I do what I do.
Mm. Well, let's ask about the number of calls that are fire-related versus some other sort of just an emergency in general. Do you respond to a call, let's say, from the highway patrol?
Yeah, for a vehicle accident or a fire on the roadway, fires in the ditch along the roadway, all sorts of that stuff.
How often does your ambulance go out versus your fire trucks?
80 to 82% of our calls this year, at least, are EMS related, and then, you know, 18% fire or rescue related.
Okay, interesting. What are some other stats that you wanted to share with us?
So far this year, we've had 2,782 calls for service in 2025. That averages out to about 10.78 calls per day. If you look at, you know, our pace for the year, that will put us about 3,930 calls for the year. In 2024, we were at 3,659.
So you're going up. Wow.
Yep. So that's 300-something calls per day, so almost a call per day increase so far this year. And the year's not over yet.
No.
So, you know, those numbers could change. If we have a snowy winter or a snowy fall here and start getting vehicle accidents or anything like that, those numbers could definitely go up.
Is that because we have more people in our town?
Well, we do have more people in the town. We have a lot of people passing through town, so we have some very busy highways that we service. Highway 52, Highway 55, 61. 316, Highway 95, Highway 10, you know.
For sure,
we have a lot of highways that we cover.
Have the roundabouts helped?
Okay. Yes.
People don't like them. I know, but my understanding is they really do
help.
Fatalities.
That roundabout that they put in at Goodwin and 46.
Oh my gosh, that was a terrible, terrible
intersection.
Yeah.
And since they put the roundabout, we maybe have had a vehicle accident, but I don't think that we've had anybody seriously hurt there. That was one of our worst intersections for a long time.
Yeah.
But we've had 2,928 EMS calls this year, 49 vehicle accidents with injuries. We've been dispatched to 32 additional vehicle accidents that didn't have injuries. So that's always a good thing. We don't mind going. We're happy to go and check people out. And when they're not hurt, we go back. We've had 25 building fires, 9 vehicle fires, and 34 miscellaneous outdoor fires. So grass fires, dumpster fires, trash pile fires, things like that.
What do you think is one of the things that we should be educated on as far as preventing fires from happening and just safety overall?
So this year's fire safety campaign with the U.S. Fire Administration is about lithium-ion batteries and battery-operated things, and I want you to think about how many battery-operated things, rechargeable things, that you have in your home right now.
Some have little batteries, and I'm even thinking like a car would have a giant battery.
That's correct, yep. And the funny thing about all of these things is that there are only so many types of rechargeable lithium-ion batteries. So when you have a bigger thing like a car, it has the same size cells in it as like a flashlight does. There's just a whole lot more of them, and they're all linked together. It's pretty interesting. Like a Tesla, for example, has thousands of these little 2.5-inch by 1/2-inch round battery cells, kind of like a AA battery, but maybe a little bigger, and they're all just linked together. It's all the same technology. It's just on a bigger scale when you have a bigger appliance like that.
Oh, I just thought it was just one giant battery.
Right.
So you're saying with something like that, there's more room for error
There
issues.
Can be. And when errors happen, it happens on a bigger scale with a vehicle. Obviously, but it doesn't take much to start a fire. So, you know, a laptop computer, for example, we want people to think about where they plug those in and charge them. Some people will plug it in and set it down on an ottoman or on a sofa or on their bed. Those are bad spots to leave them because the bedding or the furniture insulates that appliance and it doesn't allow it to breathe. You'll notice that your laptop computer probably has a fan on it.
Yes.
Well, it needs some space between what it's sitting on and the computer itself for that fan to ventilate the computer or the battery and cool it off. When it can't do that, it'll heat up to the point where sometimes they start on fire. And we've had fires in Hastings caused by laptop batteries, lithium ion batteries, all of these things that were caused by batteries.
So that's preventable. How?
Well, the first thing is watch where you're charging things. We'd like people to have them on a hard, flat surface without, you know, other combustibles around so that if they do get hot, they don't catch anything else on fire. The other thing is buy buying listed appliances, so UL listed, Underwriters Laboratories, the little circle with the U and the L in it, or some other certifying entity. Depending on where it's made, they might not have UL, but they might have CSA or something like that that has a stamp on it. And you know, with global trade and everybody liking Amazon, Amazon's great, but you can find some really cheaply made stuff on there that doesn't have these things, and those are the more dangerous things. So charging is an important thing. Buying rated products or tested products is important. And then what's happened a number of times is the charging cord breaks for an appliance. And I could either go to the manufacturer and buy one for $70 that was engineered and designed to go with that product, or I could go on Amazon. And I'm not knocking Amazon. You can buy a knockoff one for $20. Well, what's everybody doing now? They're buying the one for $20. Okay. That's not tested with that product. It maybe doesn't supply the voltage that it should, or maybe it supplies too much voltage, or it has a really cheap, flimsy cord. That appliance that's charging draws more power than that can supply, and then the cord heats up, and then we have a fire. So there are a number of things that you can do to prevent that, making sure you have the right charger, watching where you charge things, keeping an eye on those appliances. When they start to get really hot when you're charging them, they're probably getting to be pretty old and should get replaced. So those are some things that we can all do just to make sure that we're being safe with these lithium-ion batteries. The problem with lithium-ion batteries is that, especially in like a vehicle, is that when we have a runaway reaction where they heat up and start on fire, there is not much that we can do to put them out. There are stories about some fire departments have had vehicle fires where they will put the vehicle in a 30-yard dumpster and fill it with water to put the fire out because there's no other way to do this. They take the vehicle out 3 weeks later and it starts on fire again. And these aren't urban legends. Right. This is proven. So these batteries, they just hold their energy and they have to get rid of it somehow. And they'll hold it for months and months and months.
Wow.
The technology is wonderful, but it's also a little dangerous too, just because we can't do much about it when it starts on fire.
So we should be respectful of these kinds of batteries.
Absolutely. Wow. And that includes disposing of them. If you throw them in the garbage, you know, I don't know how garbage trucks work these days. That's a different line of work than what I'm in. But I remember, you know, the garbage truck that they used to have where they put all the garbage in the back and then the big scooper comes in and kind of compacts it all. Well, when that thing comes in and compacts all of the garbage, it's going to split those batteries open, and then they're going to short out and start on fire. And that there have been a number of garbage truck fires, not necessarily in Hastings, but around the state and the country, that have been caused by lithium-ion batteries that weren't properly disposed of.
So disposal is important.
They should be recycled. So anything with lithium should be recycled. Best place to take those is the recycling zone over in Eagan. It's kind of at the corner of Yankee Doodle and Dodd. And they can take those batteries from you and dispose of them properly so that they're not a hazard to anyone.
Great information. Thank you. What time is the event at the fire station on October 6th?
We typically went from 7 to 9 p.m. We had a lot of feedback about kids getting home and getting to bed. We are starting at 6 this year. So 6 p.m. on October 7th, we will start our fire prevention open house.
Well, thank you so much. Chris Paulson, he's the assistant fire chief for the city of Hastings, and we are grateful for his time, insights, and education on so many topics. And you are listening to another edition of Community in Depth on AM 1460 and FM 97.7 KDWA in Hastings.